On this, the first day of our calendar, we are permitted and encouraged by our culture to think about habits which we would like to change and goals which we choose to set for ourselves for the new year. Our rational brain knows that each day is the beginning of the rest of our lives and could as well be the logical beginning of the next 365 days. But still, this is a day specified for new beginnings and new resolve. We've heard about Laura talk about what a resolution is. Resolving to do something, a course of action determined or decided on. My take on resolution is that it's personal, a habit to break or to form. Its focus is mainly the self, self-improvement, ourselves. Resolutions have a limited time frame of a year to accomplish. Many resolutions never make it past 1 week. By July, most of them have been forgotten. Jokes are made about broken resolutions as if we are expected to, or at least pre-forgiven for, not achieving them. You may, and many do, make the same resolution every year. It is perfectly reasonable if your resolve lapses to take it up the next day and not wait until the next year, but it's almost as if a lapse in the resolution gives us permission to forget it for the rest of the year. Commitment. To pledge or assign to some particular course or use. To obligate or pledge oneself. Commitments contrasted with resolutions have a longer time frame. If you're committed to a course of action or an idea or an ideal or a relationship, it is long term and not easily relinquished. Some commitments to action cannot be reversed, as in a dive off a diving board once your feet have left the board. A commitment to a relationship or an ideal tends to be a living, changing thing. People do abandon or change commitments, but usually not without significant thought. Commitments also draw us out of ourselves and cause us to act for a greater good than pure self-interest would dictate. We find ourselves frequently thinking of ways we can further the ideal or the relationship we are committed to. We make adjustments in our spending of money and time to strengthen that commitment. It has been said that you cannot have commitment without conviction. Can we apply this concept of commitment to the ideas and principles of Unitarian Universalism? Can we be so convinced of the worth and dignity of each life that it becomes part of our deliberate thought process guiding our actions? Can we be committed to the search for truth and justice? Can we be committed to standing on the side of love? What would we give up if we had to for these principles? A lot of us have given up something convinced of the interdependence of all existence. We recycle, we reuse, we limit wastefulness, we clean up after ourselves and turn off unnecessary lights, and we buy locally and eat mindfully. Is this the easiest of the principles to commit to? Can you be committed to an organization, to this congregation? Of course you can. In doing some reading for our 50th anniversary, I ran across a pamphlet, a sermon by Duncan Howlett, who is the successor to A. Powell Davies at All Souls Unitarian Church, a sermon he wrote in 1962, still relevant, offering us some good reasoning why we should be committed to this Unitarian Universalist faith. Karen spoke about this. In this church, we offer you a faith which places no reliance on the doctrine of revelation. Our faith invites us to ask the first question: what is your faith? What is your conviction? When it is answered, you're invited to follow it with a second question: why do you believe that? You will not be told that we believe because God revealed it to us or to anyone else. And if you are tempted, as you surely will be, to ask a third question, you will be encouraged to do so. And so on, until you have asked the last question you can think of. And what is the last question? It is the same as the second and the 49th. How do you know? If you think of religion as the attempt of man to find meaning for his life, to find a home in the cosmos, so to speak, then the process of inquiry that knows no limit does not end in skepticism or doubt. Rather, it marks the beginning of a spiritual pilgrimage. Then your faith becomes something that unfolds before you as you pursue it to its uttermost limits. Then you may know the sensation of love that calls from you deeds of generosity and self-sacrifice you had not supposed lay within your power. And in it all, you find, too, a sense of wonder at the mounting complexities of things and a sense of reverence before the majesty of the whole. Could we today consider a new or renewed commitment? If a habit or promise, a resolution, is all you can muster today, that's perfectly acceptable as well. In fact, a promise, even to yourself, that you will break an old habit or form a new one, or finally, seriously commit to a cause that calls you out of yourself, any of these are proof of your conviction that you and humankind itself can improve, can change, can live less selfish lives. It's proof that there is another part of your brain which can, with thought and intention, control the automatic reptilian part of the brain. Karen Armstrong, in her book 12 Steps to a Compassionate Life, says we have an instinctive brain, which she calls a reptilian brain, which is our default for survival and action. Satisfying life-sustaining needs, fight or flight, reproduction, competition for survival are some of them. However, we humans also have the ability to control these selfish responses on occasion and for brief periods of time. We have a bigger frontal cortex which allows us rational thinking, which can override our reptilian brain and which can allow cooperation and kindness and altruism to motivate us. This is where we choose to live, want to live, don't we? Ms. Armstrong goes on to say that fear is what stops us from acting. And how do we conquer the fear of commitment? Recently, there was an activity here at UUCF for which a sign-up was requested. Few people signed up. This got me thinking about commitment, and I thought I saw a general lack of commitment. Now, the failure to sign up for an event is not a grievous lack of commitment, but a lapse of kindness to whoever organized the event. But what is curious is the reluctance to decide ahead of time that one will attend an event. We will show up. We do show up reliably for events and occasions, but can't bring ourselves to put our intentions on paper. Is it the obligation part of commitment that stops us short? Or do we feel so overscheduled in other parts of our lives that we cannot bear to give away the little freedom to pre-decide how to spend our time? Or are we waiting for a better offer? It's even worse when not only our time but our money is requested, and this end-of-the-year opportunity for tax deductions has spawned an overabundance of requests for money from every organization. Pledge? Let me think about all the reasons I might not be able to fulfill that intent, so I better not. Fear of failing or waiting for a better offer? We same folk will gladly hand over spare cash if we have it, on the spur of the moment if asked by a friend, or for a cause which momentarily touches our hearts. But pre-deciding, dare we say prioritizing, is difficult for us. Is spontaneity our best effort at controlling our selfishness? Perhaps you're familiar with the old zinger, which goes, I need to reevaluate my priorities someday, but there are a lot of other things I have to do first. Today is the culturally sanctioned day to evaluate your priorities. Another thing about commitment is that once committed, a person usually wants to enlist others to help or to join. Enlisting a companion is a strategy for keeping a resolution, like losing weight or exercising. Knowing how hard it is to sustain a commitment alone, who will you enlist to help you? Where will you find encouragement in your commitment? Here. Who shall we find to model commitment? This congregation is full of committed individuals. One advantage of belonging to this size of caring community, this congregation, is that you know about committed relationships, marriages, families, friendships. You know persons committed to their work and committed to honor and honesty and hard work. You know persons committed to loving kindness, to generosity, to social justice, to diversity, to music and art, to service. What better place to take small actions of kindness to benefit your fellow congregants? There are meals to be taken to those who are ill or recovering from surgery or families with new babies. There are those who could use an invitation to lunch or a friendly phone call or card. Yes, even from a congregant whom they do not know. I see you go up to offer friendly support or congratulations to those who share their joys and sorrows in the worship service. Knowledge about the unspoken joys and trials is harder to come by. But surely there are creative ways to share and to graciously receive in this congregation. Perhaps you could encourage someone else. Ask them to serve, or thank them with words, or by joining with them. Finally, we need to be willing to speak our conviction and our commitment to others outside our congregation. To speak up when someone is being unfairly stereotyped or bullied for their beliefs or heritage, to quietly insist on speaking the truth when falsehoods are flying in the conversation. This takes courage. You may not have met all these people yet, because sadly we often don't speak of our commitments. Is it fear of being caught failing to always live up to our convictions? Or is it because we don't want to brag or set ourselves up as a standard or example? Quite the opposite. We're sensitive to causing others to feel guilty, so we're careful not to sound as if we expect something from them that they might be unwilling or unable to give. We need to invite others to join us in our commitments. And we need to be willing to discuss why and how our convictions led us to our commitments. We are worth it. They are worth it. This congregation is worth it. The invitation is important and may be the one thing keeping someone from joining us. I was reading a poem by Robert Frost, which he calls The Pasture, and he speaks about the work a farmer is planning to do that day. I'm going out to clean the pasture spring. I'll only stop to rake the leaves away and wait to watch the water clear, I may. I shan't be gone long. You come too. Perhaps today is the perfect day to consider your commitments and the convictions that led to them. If you cannot manage commitments today, then consider some resolutions that pull you out of yourself and benefit others. As we think about the spiritual work of this new year, I extend to you the invitation. You come too.